hard, fast. So I'm hoping it's going to be short.
Well, if anybody wants to move away from me.
I would be sliding away from me.
It's a beautiful place. I was there in July, so it was fun. But I like the beach. It was beautiful. But 66, mid-60s and low-70s, so it wasn't that cold. Because people from California saying it's so cold up here. It was from the Northeast as well. It was wonderful.
I think it won't be
done
all the time. It shouldn't be. And so she told us, she's like, yo, like, I got a new coat for Alaska. It was just like a little bit of a thicker North Face. So we're like, no, like, you need like a real down jacket. And so it's so funny to see like her Snapchats or her posts on there's a moose in my backyard, but I have my like jacket, and she hikes all the time, and just looks stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you speaking of?
Someone just called in. Let's see. Can you hear us? Whoever is here, I'm currently trying to make sure we can hear you. See, is the audio not working?
Where are you?
Can you hear us?
This is Dave Putnam. Yeah, I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Fantastic.
Great. Okay, good.
Well, we'll see if Chief Zona will call him, but that being said, right now, the committee is only at 7 members, and there are only at 7 people, and we have 4 present and 5 on the phone, so we have a quorum. We actually have a quorum. So in that case, the time is 4:34, and I'm going to call this meeting to order. Thank you all for joining us, and welcome back to the Returners, and Marcus, welcome to the committee house. Jeremy, how are you, Jeremy?
Doing well. How are you, sir?
Good. We're just getting started. So we have first of all on the phone. Chief Zona might be calling in. We will see if our schedule permits that, but you didn't miss anything. We're just getting started. So first thing on the agenda is the review of minutes from our March 28th meeting. Those were attached earlier. Does anyone have any questions or issues with the minutes from March 28th?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Hearing none, those minutes are approved. Next is the minutes for the April, and so I saw that place. It's great, technology doesn't work. There, I think, meetings from a minute from the April 17th meeting. Any questions, comments, concerns on those? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second? Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Any dissent? Hearing none, the minutes of April 17th are approved. And then next up will be April 25th. That meeting, actually, I just, speaking of the office, we never got those minutes, but I just wanted to make sure I put them on the agenda because if I didn't put them, they would have been forgotten. So we will handle that at our next meeting. But that moves on to business of the day. And April 25th, we didn't receive a copy of those minutes from the office. So
that would have been the three meetings that I didn't
Notice too. Yes. So I will speak to the office to make sure that we don't have that issue again. Mm-hmm. However, that being said, being that we do have some new members and we are getting started, I'm going to let my board maybe go around the room and introduce yourselves. So I will start. Matthew Battaglia. I'm a second year JD MBA, and I am the chairman of the committee.
I'm Sarah. I'm a sophomore in ILI school. I'm on the student center.
Richard Bunsell, the Department of Government. I am a leader. trying to figure out
how long
something like that. Mm-hmm.
Also, actually, Professor Bunsell, I spoke with Marty, so he confirmed to me that he had stepped aside and that you had replaced him for the seat, correct?
If he says so.
Okay, because he said he had spoken with this morning.
Yes.
Okay.
He contacted me.
I just wanted to verify just so everyone's aware. So first.
And I did just today update.
Okay, not a problem. I just wanted to make sure everyone was on the same page. Thank you and welcome.
Michelle Horvath, I serve as the Judicial Administrator and I'm an ex-officio member.
Lisa Lieberwitz, I'm a professor in the ILR school, and I'm here representing the Senate, I guess.
Yeah. I'm Gabe. Most of you know me. I'm the chair of the University Assembly.
Professor Putnam, do you want to take a second to introduce yourself for the new members of the committee?
Yeah, my name is Dave Putnam. I'm a faculty member in biomedical engineering and chemical engineering. I'm here also representing the Faculty Senate.
Fantastic. I'm Jeremy Cruiser. I work for Student Services IT. I am also the Executive Vice Chair on the Employee Assembly, the Chair of Internal Operations on the University Assembly.
So let us know when you take over the world.
A lot of hats.
Anyways, welcome everyone. It's a pleasure to have you here. So the first thing is to look at what we did last year. Last year, the committee had a bit of a momentous year, or a bit of an interesting year. We spent a lot of time looking at a policy regarding transcript annotations in terms of those as required by law and then just general code offenses. We had a large discussion about that. That is still ongoing. I will be revisiting that later. The whole purpose of this meeting is just to get a feel where the committee is, provide some context, and then start trying to get the nuts and bolts so we can hit the ground running. We had that going on. We also, in terms of unfinished business, we also have the quote unquote the definition of students in the code. That is the request of risk manager to clarify how certain minors and how certain underage students are classified, because currently the code is written so that if anyone has any, pretty much it's very broad, that anyone has any ties, they can be considered a student. And for some of our, actually for a large number of our activities, it's simply not practical if you're on campus for 3 days in terms of just like summer camp or other abbreviated things. A lot of the discussion around that was in relationship towards students who are high school students who are taking some classes through Cornell but are still high school students. That was the one area where they come very close to the lines that we were having discussions about. How do we make sure that if they were to come to campus and participate in terms of protests or other items, how they still have the protections of the code while still understanding the fact that they are minors and they are not matriculated students in the traditional sense. And then we also had a large number of after the former chairman of the committee, Mr. McBride, he was removed, and we had some other instances where there was a public hearing. So I had spoken with a number of committee members as well as committee members past and present, just in terms of thoughts they had in terms of where the code, the code in general, as well as the hearing board procedures. And it is our hope this semester, hopefully soon, to have the hearing board chairs, or the hearing board chairs, as well as their administrative chair come in for a meeting just to update us because we haven't spoken to them in a while. And that is we did pass one code change last year, was incorporating the recommendations of the Outer Space Working Group to the code. That was accepted by the president and has been incorporated into the code. And the other thing, in this case now it's a 2-year carryover, we had some code changes that the UA had looked at 2 years ago, had passed, they were returned. One of them, I believe, has been rendered moot, and the other one is actually partially going, like would likely be incorporated into some of the other just housekeeping changes that we had been myself and Mr. Coffin about with the Ms. Horvath about this past week. So those are just to keep those on our radar so they don't fall through the cracks. But that is what we did last year. And in terms of looking at this year, we have quite a bit on our plate in terms of trying to finish what we ended last year, finish what we had last year, as well as looking into just general housekeeping for the code. And in light of what happened with Mr. McBride, just in terms of just writ large, how the procedures of the code are written, and Myself and Mr. Kaufman had a very productive meeting with Ms. Horvath in terms of just general code changes, in terms of updating, as well as looking at the code in a larger picture in terms of, is there a way to simplify the language without damaging the meaning and its intent, as well as just engaging the community more in terms of where they think the code needs to go. Is the code, is in many ways, it has a lot of a piecemeal been bolted on over the decades. So that is really where we are in terms of where we were last year, where I just was on my agenda for this year. But that being said, I'm open to any questions or comments from anyone here.
Well, is this sort of like discussion about things we might be looking at?
Yes.
Well, in particular, you had last year after the Faculty Senate voted on the academic freedom statement, I think you had mentioned that you thought that was interesting.
Yes.
Did you talk about that at all?
We had spoken about it briefly. Thank you actually for reminding me. That was in a list of just general things that had come up. I know, I had spoken briefly with President Pollack, and I bumped into her. We spoke, obviously. She's made no secret of her support of free speech and free expression. Mm-hmm. Obviously, knowing Cornell is a private institution, and we have reasonable limits. That being said, the concern is how do you ensure that we're not going to have anarchy but still have maximum expression. I know the Faculty Senate, I was actually at the meeting when you discussed it. And it's something that this committee, I think, it was interested in, remains interested in. I think it would be prudent perhaps towards the start of the term to look at how is it written in the code? Can we strengthen the code? Or even if we'd just like to put a resolution forward saying we continue to adhere to and support the ideas of free speech, obviously moderated with the idea of responsibility because we are a private academic institution, but to try and ensure that that is enshrined and that is on the list of, actually it's the top of miscellaneous code changes that I will be typing up and going through last year to try and amalgamate where we are after this. Mm-hmm. But my goal with this committee or this year is to try and have this meeting more frequently to try and start, because we have, I'd say, a list of things that have been building up over the years, and it comes down to things. This past year we had a chair switch, the year before we had a chair switch, to have a year of stability where we can take that backlog and really start cutting through it. Because once the backlog is done, then I feel much more comfortable saying, let's look at a big product like the code writ large. But at this moment, we have so many things on our plate to say, oh, we're going to add the code, which is enormous, to it deleterious.
Well, and I think on the academic freedom issues, there's probably going to be some work through the Senate, to try to work on that statement and develop it more. And so it might be that that's a good place for it to start, and then maybe certain aspects of it may overlap with the code, but certain aspects may be separate from the code.
Absolutely. Okay. And actually, that relates to something else. I was speaking with some members from the GPSA. They're looking at their policy in terms of interrelationships between faculty and graduate students. That's been kicking around for a while. My understanding is it's starting to coalesce around something. There's talk of whether or not that should how that should impact the code, if it should impact the code. And there are some people who say it should come through the UA. I personally would say I think it's a good idea. However, depending on how it pans out, it might touch on us or land in our plate. That being said, at this point, it's speculative, but just keep it on everyone's radar. So anything else anyone thinks we should add or otherwise consider?
What was the status on the transcript notation?
So actually, Michelle was kind enough to let us know the registrar appears to have, and I want to say interim, they've put a policy on their website for how they're going to handle. There were some meetings over the summer. That being said, it didn't appear to go through the traditional university policy system or follow the policy on policies. So Mr. Kaufman, we're going to have a discussion. Because we had gotten fairly far in terms of language. We were just ironing out some of the kinks.
Yeah.
So in terms of figuring how we're going to mesh that in and work with them, because we don't want to step on their toes. And I mean, at the end of the day, they need to have stability because the university keeps chugging along as we're discussing. Mm-hmm. But to figure out how we're going to interlock that, a bunch of your comments were very insightful, and we've done some tweaks to the draft.
Yeah.
My goal actually this weekend is to go through and start really amalgamating a lot of the documents and saying, okay, here's where we were, here are some discussion points to restart that and hopefully get through it so that we can handle it or decide we're not going to handle it and just leave with the policy and then leave with the registrar's policy and then move forward.
Where was that incorporated? So I just want to look up and see what the existing.
My understanding is that this had always been their practice and their policy, and so they had just published it because they did a new website. And so it's on the university's website, and that had been their practice for all transcript behavioral issues. And so that's my understanding with that.
So it doesn't stop us from continuing to look at adjusting that.
Right, I think.
I want to see what's currently there, of course, but.
Yeah, I think because the code is silent in regards to some of these issues as a university department that has the right to kind of published. And so my understanding is that they had just published it on their website.
Yes, so. That was my understanding. I would be happy to send, I'm going to send a link out with it just so everyone has it. But that's right. It's just, it's not surprising they'd have a policy, and it's better to have it out there. But that being said, our discussions were moving forward. So whether or not we have a meeting of the minds and we try and amalgamate them and try and figure out how they work together, or we put in the code, obviously there's discussion to be had. But just to be aware that this is what the current practice is, and figure out how it interlocks with the code and how we wish to move forward. Because it does reference parts of the code, obviously, because it relates to the code. And that is the transportation policy. I bumped into Elliot Young from Risk Management towards the beginning of the summer. He obviously is their priority to get that through. They said it's not a rush, but it's more of they're looking proactively, which is obviously we prefer that, because then we have the time to take it. That being said, I would like to get that to them sooner rather than later. I know, President Liberts, you had a number of very important points you had raised in terms of the way risk management had proposed it was more as a cut out or a carve out, and obviously looking at how it can be more nuanced for, obviously, if you're an eighth grader here for a soccer camp or for a day camp.
You mean on the definition of students?
Yes, correct, sorry. Okay. So the definition of students, looking at the whether or not, obviously, there are certain places where it's clear that they really probably should be outside of it, and then as we start getting closer to people who you would almost look like a student, act like a student, talk like a student, with the high school students about as close as we've seen, how would that, or how do you, I guess, nuance that and both put gradations as opposed to just saying they're completely out of the code and out of the protections? So that is something I'd like to hopefully get moving forward sooner rather than later. And
that's completely different from the notations.
Yes,
right?
I mean, I apologize. Yes.
Switch gears
yes.
here.
No, I'm sorry.
So on the notations, is there actually a draft?
Yes, there is.
Has that been sent around since I haven't been getting
stuff? It has. I will make sure you get a copy of that. But there's a draft. Jeremy had written up a very extensive set of comments. A number of the comments I think are actually just excellent things. So I would incorporate them. A few things that I think the committee would need to discuss. But I will take that and I will forward all that information out to you, as well as Sarah, because you're new.
Maybe it would be good just to send it to everyone.
It'll be sent out to everyone, but yeah. I will make sure the entire context gets sent to everyone.
You cannot have issues with the listservs.
What's that?
Sometimes there are issues with the listservs.
Yeah, I haven't gotten notice of the last three meetings, other than this one.
What's your net ID? I'll make sure you hear.
It's RLL5.
The office.
Yeah, well, there is actually,
I can add people now.
There is actually an RL15 on campus. So.
Make sure I get the L and not the 1.
So you were listed last and you are listed now, but if you weren't getting them, we'll go through and check, because that is
I'll check on it.
And actually, I might even send an email to anyone who wasn't here today just to make sure you actually are getting the emails, because that would be less than ideal. But that's everything I can think of in terms of where we have some other minor just housekeeping things in terms of, Michelle had brought forward an idea about, actually not an idea, but something that I agree with, and that right now the code says in terms of she has discretion to suspend an organization or a student for a year, or you're dismissed. So it has some flexibility to move, so that instead of, you have a gradation, you can go up to 5 years, instead of, as in sort of all an organization to be quote unquote purged. So if a student has a 4-year lifespan, you suspend them for 4 or 5 years, the student organization can completely turn over before coming back, instead of just kicking them off campus. That will be typed up in actually my notes from that meeting, just to go through in the list of smaller changes that we still need to go through with a fine tooth comb, but in terms of just things that would appear to reflect best practices and allow more discretion, because understand that the offense we see to simply have those shades of gray. But that is everything I have in terms of what we did last year, unfinished business. And I've been doing a lot of talking, so please, if anyone has any comments or questions, please feel free to jump in.
Matt, what are the priorities on this?
Absolutely. So that is the discretion of the committee. That being said, my internal part is what I'd like to see us tackle would be to square away business from last year as soon as possible, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, so that we can then have that handled and then turn our full focus to the laundry list of smaller fixes that we've been looking at. And then after that, looking at the code writ large. I know Michelle had expressed her interest in just looking at it holistically. I think it would work best for us to take piecemeals and say, okay, X section, obviously being aware of how they interact, but start looking at them in more detail and go in some community members. But in the big picture, it's knock out the backlog, move a little proactive, and then start looking in terms of bigger picture, in terms of how do we fit, how does the code fit in, how does it even interact with the run of 6.4, how does that fit in there? There was some talk when I was looking at I was working on the we're working with Carol Grumbach about the revision of 6.4, about having the complaints advisors be, I guess, nominated and confirmed through the UA, similar to the judicial codes counselors. I don't necessarily think that needs to live in the code, but it would fall, I would argue, would fall through this committee to look at, okay, how do we incorporate into the UA's documents, or and how do we work with the 6.4, the office control of 6.4 to try and integrate that in, and that we already have the JCCs come through us, we have an established process. And 6.4, when I last spoke to them, which admittedly was a year ago, they're looking for ways to involve the community more and to have more community voice in that process. And I said, well, the complaints advisors are picked from the law school, they're done by the law school, a process that mirrors the JCC up until the UA doesn't have a role in it. So it seemed to me a relatively easy way to bring it a little more into the pure governance system. That obviously may have changed, and we'll have to look at that, but that's something that, just things that have been on the radar for a while, try and knock those out before moving forward. That was long winded, I thought, guys.
It's okay. I think that a good way to organize them would be by like whatever's like easiest first.
Low-hanging fruit, yep.
Yeah, like let's take the low-hanging fruit. My opinion on what I think, I might be wrong, but my opinion is that the lowest hanging fruit is the amending the code to change, to give the J the discretion to determine how long to suspend an organization so that it's not, like the exact phrase, like the exact wording essentially means that the judicial administrator can suspend someone, and we will have to get the exact text. The judicial administrator can suspend an organization for no longer than a year, like it can be a year or less, and then the other penalty that she can impose is expulsion permanently. And so most organizations actually fall somewhere in between, like as like a justified punishment. And so I have been personally contacted by the president of IFC and the president of Panhell, and they are like, this makes no sense. Why would we even have this? Like, we would rather give the J the discretion to suspend us for 2 or 3 years and not expel us completely. I understand that there might be differing interpretations of that. My personal opinion is, like, I don't anticipate that being controversial because Michelle wants, like, asked for that, and, like, the presidents of the Greek councils wanted that, and they don't agree on much. And they actually took it upon themselves to contact me unprovoked. Well, I didn't contact them. They contacted me. And so that's, I just thought I would bring that to light here.
I think as we're hitting, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, actually, just with that, I would ask with that resolution to have the change of the plan. The second part of that is I would ask that the statute of limitations for student organizations be extended to 3 years. Not for the individuals in the organization, that would still remain in 1 year. But one of the big reasons and the most consistent cases that we see from organizations are hazing cases. And to be able to prove a pattern of hazing, if I can only look back 1 year, wouldn't make sense. And so kind of in exchange for what I think is the best practice, I would ask that that go hand in hand.
So both of those sound pretty reasonable just off the cuff to me, and I think that's a great way to start approaching the issues with the code. I would also think, and maybe I'm wrong in this, that we could kind of two birds with one stone also be looking at plain language as we're starting to rewrite some of these things to help make the code more approachable. So we can, I think we might be able to approach these pieces and solve multiple problems at a time.
So hazing is a collective. So, I mean, here that is one in left field, if I could. But to make piecemeal changes and make those permanent, if we're looking at the entire community. So hazing would be a collective thing, and you'd be looking at other kinds of collective offenses to make sure that evidence and offenses and so forth are consistently defined. So I'm a little, this is from left field, but I'm a little reluctant not to take it just in functional better than mine. I'm a little reluctant just to take it up. Separately, thinking of those things. What are the collective offenses, you know, like student organizations and protests?
Yeah, I don't think we'd be adding any hazing language. I think the definition of hazing is actually really strong and was amended a couple years ago. And so my thought is the 3 years would be to demonstrate that the behavior isn't just a one-off thing, but we're demonstrating, because when we look at how best practices for hazing investigations is that you want to look for more than one class to demonstrate that this isn't just a one-off thing, because when you look at tailored sanctions, you want to make sure that you're addressing the root issue and not just that. So there's very few code provisions that talk about collective behavior, but any of the sanctions or any of the violations could apply to the entire group. So let's say the entire group, not as part of a hazing violation, but just decided to vandalize a building just because it used to be their house and another fraternity or sorority, or actually I don't have jurisdiction or fraternity or sorority. So the chess club is vandalizing the checkers club's house, right? So they could do that as a group, and we would still charge the organization with vandalism.
But hazing, you can have individual offenses and collective offenses at the same time. And the relationship between those two, from left field, about the organization.
I think Jeremy just mentioned that picture there, boys.
I'm sorry, what?
I thought you'd raise your hand to speak.
No.
Okay, I have a really hard time to talk about code issues in the abstract. Right. So, and you know, it may be that there were some meetings where some of this was discussed. And so I don't know about that. You don't know about that. You know, and so it's just, I mean, there's a disconnect between saying that we're talking about changing the code, but we're not looking at the code.
Yes.
You know, so it may be that we can say, well, this isn't
here.
Well, good. We'll put it out there so we can see it.
All right.
But
actually, can I do it on there?
You should be able to.
Yeah, well, I mean, all I'm saying is that I understand that we're talking generally about topics, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I find it impossible to talk about it in any meaningful way unless we actually have something in front of us, is all I'm saying.
I completely agree.
Yeah, and so, and there may be a couple of ways that I think at meetings it would be really good to structure. One is to always have the... They always have the specific language that you're looking at. But also, it'd be really good if that was a matter of course, we always had at least a few copies of the full code available.
I was thinking that, exactly. I will speak, I know the officer said, we had talked about copy needs, and I said if we can get even a binder or a couple ring-bound copies of that, just so that we have the, moving forward, we're going to have more specific conversations, but to have the code would be, I think, valuable. And actually, to Professor Benzel's point, I agree that but looking at this in terms of a large scale or a small code change fixes and then the large one, looking at the code holistically, I suspect will take this committee a very long time, and there is, being realistic, there's a chance that people turn over, there's a change in direction by the committee or the assembly. So in terms of, I agree we don't want to go through and piecemeal fix the whole thing, that defeats the purpose. But in terms of handling a couple of the, I guess the easier ones to knock out and then moving on to the revision, you know, this is an easy win that can be of use to the commissioner's office almost immediately. So to handle those and then jump further into a large scale one, I think it's, from my experience, this committee, you know, we set lofty goals in terms of just the reality of staffing it and the availability. Sometimes it falls flat, which is why if we can get it done, and more of an idea. I think better to get it done. That being said, I do understand that we don't want to, in essence, put band-aids on the thing, which is what we've been doing for the past couple of decades. But, and the one thing actually on that is, I know, Gabe, you said you're going to be meeting with council's office in relationship to the code. I know last time this committee was heavily looking at the code. We had some people from council's office here, I think, once we get into the more specifics, we should. But in terms of code revisions, not inundating the president's office with them, or does the president want an omnibus or us to pass them through and then the UA handles them all together? Or do we want to send 8 resolutions through? In terms of just, it's for us, it doesn't make much of a difference, but you know, the president's office has to approve or has to review them, and they almost always get bounced to council's office to figure out what would make everyone's life the easiest, because we don't want to exhaust them or otherwise bad to them. We don't need to change the age. So,
Just to expand on that, from experience in multiple assemblies over time and multiple committees, I find that there's really three kind of categories towards addressing something like the code, large documents of changes. And the first we want to look at are those that are easy, where we're going to just have largely agreement across the board that we can just solve because they're relatively obvious. Two are the time critical ones, things that we recognize a failure currently that needs to be addressed in a time sensitive manner, so that we have it available to use as a tool going forward. So I think those are the first things we want to deal with. The other are the ones that there are going to be a significant amount of contention over discussing. Those are going to take an extended period of time, sometimes over multiple terms, just to get a couple of things resolved. We don't want to wait on the other two, because the other one is the body, the general overall picture of, like you're talking, which is the second piece we should be addressing, which is the general topic. But we don't want to hold up on those few that are going to be highly critical. So we should kind of carve those out to address after we've addressed first the highly critical and the easy, then the body, and then the difficult ones.
I mean, there's another, in terms of the language of the code, reads very much is, I think legally is maybe a good word for certain parts of it, but there is also almost a stopgap or an alternate solution that's been floated would be to have, in essence, a plain language version. I know that my understanding is the U.S. government does this with some procedures, a plain language accompaniment that goes with the code and says, here's what it means, but of course, in the event that there's a discrepancy, the code will carry. That's, I think, might be an option if we encounter a lot of headwinds in terms of changing the actual language. That being said, there's also a movement in the legal profession to try and make things understandable, but yet still specific enough to be what we need them to be. So if we can get to that, I think that is the ideal, but also recognizing that if we find that we're really struggling, we have options. And I think Mr. Goff, our game, has pulled up the current version that Michelle was looking at in terms of the penalties for students and organizations.
Yeah, so this is, well, so they're explicitly distinct, right? So university registered organizations have special penalties that can be imposed upon them for committing a code violation. And the recommendations that were transmitted to me had to do with 4 and 6 or 4 or 6. It could technically, you know, we could amend either. And just like literally all we would have to do is, instead of it saying not to exceed 1 year, all we would have to do is remove not to exceed 1 year. That's the only thing we would have to do. It would just be striking those lines and that would be it.
Well, then also, I mean, in terms of, I received an email on this as well. Someone mentioned changing it to 5 years, someone mentioned it to 3 years, determining that. And someone also had mentioned...
Oh, yeah, or not to exceed 5 years.
I don't mean, there's in terms of...
Change the number.
I will forward the email. But there was in terms of, do we want to make it open-ended or have a cabin? Some people said just to change it to 5 years. To, obviously, I know, Michelle, you don't like indefinite suspension. I agree with that. But in terms of looking for what might happen in 20 years, assuming that language is still there, and we have a new JA, a new CDC, or whatever the successor body is, to make it clear that if the goal is not to allow indefinite suspension through this, but to have if it's going to be more than 5 years, you're functionally expelled anyways. Why not just go ahead and sign the get it done? And the other one I heard someone had spoken to me about in terms of the statute of limitations, in terms of the hazing, someone had said they were slightly concerned with extending the statute of limitations, but there may have, in terms of just allowing things, old things to be brought back, but there was an idea of, if it would be so that evidence could be, or in essence for hazing or for certain offenses that there is allowed to look back, that I think would come up when we get to that discussion. But again, as Professor Liebert says, we're going so much of talking in the abstract, you can only talk so much.
There it is. There's specific
and we can code. We can send yes. out the section.
Yes. As we
approach a meeting. I'm sorry, I'm going to talk over top of people. As we approach a meeting to discuss a specific topic, too, in the past, we have always sent out the specifics of the piece that we're going to talk about as well. So it's never going to be an abstract conversation when we're talking about a specific application.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. This meeting was actually my hope of this meeting was to have more of a free form discussion mm-hmm. so that we can essence start figuring out where everyone's thoughts are. And that's why the goal is not to view. I didn't expect anyone to bring any drafts. It's actually I explicitly didn't send out the drafts even I have, just as more of a introduction and just a general discussion. But that's good. Anything else? Anyone else? Anything else, Michelle?
I'd say I agree. I think there's some areas that would do some low hanging fruit, mm-hmm. and I think it's going to make the process better. It's going to make the adjudication more fair. I think really there's some compromise that I think they made from kind of both parts, and I think. I didn't realize it, until we spoke on Friday that gave him the content of the IFC and the Panhellenic, and they're really in favor of that because it's a limitation where it's not the extreme. And so, I agree. I think some of these long hanging fruits, is just to make the conduct adjudication process because we're already in the swing of it. We get our 25% of our cases in the first 6 weeks. So we have hearing schedules and we're running full on. So, I would prefer us to kind of do that and then really start to look at the big overarching elephant.
So we're in open discussion on this?
So we're in open discussion right now. I mean, the agenda at this point is still one. We are in open discussion. So we're in the race.
I was just going to say that it seems to me that when we do, talk substantively about something like this, and we really have to have a meeting where we're going to say, are we going to be working on this? That one of the things we might want to build in as a kind of a protocol, if we're not already doing it, and picks up on what Richard was saying, is that for each proposed change, number one, what's motivating the change? What's the problem that's trying to be addressed? I'm assuming that's probably part of what you normally send out anyway. What's the proposed solution? And then what are the consequences in terms of the impact that might affect other parts of the code? That would always be something we'd want to know, right? Are there any effects on the rest of the code that should be part of what we're thinking about? What are some of the consequences that we would anticipate occur? And obviously, if you don't anticipate, then you can't talk about what the unanticipated consequences, yes. But it seems like that really is an important aspect of the discussion, is to try to say, when there are ripple effects, are there things that we should think about in other parts of the code so that we don't say later, oh,
well, actually,
I should have thought of that.
It's something that is my time in the committee and even before that, we've always tried to coax out of it mm-hmm. and to think about even with the risk management language terms of definition of student. That's something that I know you brought up and I was, mm-hmm. we were having a discussion about it, just a matter of, I think it would behoove us to just formalize it as a standard operating procedure because it comes up all the time. It's, here's this one change, and then the code is interdependent, and it has knock-on effects. So to at least encourage someone bringing something forward to say, did you at the very least even look to think, and so we can just try and get some of that out of the way. Mm-hmm. But I think Sarah even spoke to
us. Oh, yeah. Just for bringing that, Gabe, you said you got an email from IFC saying they want to increase that number?
Yeah.
Why? What?
So I'll, may I answer? Yes, because it's essentially, and Michelle, you can correct me if I'm wrong. The reason you'd want to increase it is because it says not to exceed 1 year. And so if you look, it says you can get suspended. Here, look
six,
at
six
yeah,
is the better
yeah,
one.
Six
one
is the better one.
Formally, saying that they can't use the
right,
rec center.
Right. Oh boy, I don't know what I just did. So yeah, so let's use six. So you can get suspended for 1 year. God, this is the worst. So this is, okay, so you could get suspended for 1 year. So you could get 3 months, 7 months, 11 months, or 12 months. You can't get 13 months. Or you can get completely dismissed.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So Sayu and Tayuga's watchers waiters. I always mix those up. Could get very different things. Yeah. I don't know which one's which. I know one of them got suspended. I still don't know which one. I assume it was the. Yeah. It could be the acapella group. Probably not the other one. Yeah. That'd be ironic. If Michelle and her judgment thinks that someone should get, like an organization should get suspended for 2 years,
or the hearing
or 3 years,
well.
Or the hearing board thinks that, then they should be able to impose that without having to dismiss them or without having to give them a punishment that is not as severe as it should be. It basically allows them to tailor the consequence more appropriately to the action. That's their take on it.
And I think that the argument that most students spend about 4 years here, and if we extend that to 4 years, you're talking about a complete turnover in the organization before they're allowed to be reinstated. Then now we're talking about a pretty extreme penalty without completely removing them from the campus. So I see an argument to be made for having the ability to go to pretty extreme without the nuclear option.
That's consistently best practice when it comes to student organization adjudication, is you usually say 5 years because you want the entire body to sign out. And when you see this mostly in like national headquarters organizations, then what happens is that the national headquarters comes back and recolonizes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
And that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. First of all, Richard, sorry.
Caught yourself.
So, you pledge in your first semester. When did you pledge from?
Second semester, or third.
So it's, you know, 3 years. 3 years on the whole would have a complete term. The thing that strikes me about this is, you know, who we're punishing. And the officers return conducting a hazing and it gets out of hand and so forth. They're usually seniors. And so then by suspending the organization more than a year, you're punishing those that are not their officers. And if we go 3 years, then it's not really unclear what we're, who we're punishing. I mean, the organization exists in the abstract somehow. I'm raising this. I mean, that's one thing. I mean, I'm not sure what the incentive is that we're trying to set up. But the other thing that strikes me is, so we can have individual violations and hazing with no collective punishment. That's right. Like, so if there's a hazing incident, individuals are charged with violations, but not the organization. Is that right?
There can be instances. So if it wasn't organized by the group, but let's say, so a common example is family traditions. So the organization may say, we don't want you to blindfold someone to take you to a cemetery. And so we find that the organization had no preference for it. But someone's sister and brother did that. And so it wouldn't be fair to punish the organization.
So
but we have individual actors.
So no, but that was an agreement with what
I
it'd be rare, but we have the cases like that. What I'm interested in is whether we can have collective punishment without individual violence. That's what I'm curious about. It's assigning responsibility for actions, individual responsibility for actions. That's really collective. And I actually think this is focusing on individuals is a good idea.
Yeah, so right up here is where are the punishments for
students.
Right, yeah, so everything here, these are punishments for students. And students can get, yeah, so for a student, you can't lose a privilege for more than a year or get, that's the,
eight.
Except unless you're suspended.
Yes.
And then it can't exceed 5 years. And there's lots of stuff going on in there,
yes.
Obviously.
But is that the expectation that if there's
collective punishment for hazing is considered, there will be individual actors as well.
So it varies in the times when we can bring individual actors, we do. With the clear and convincing standard, there's sometimes we can't make our burden of proof that the individual actors, but the organization. And so sometimes what's really interesting is that officers aren't included in the communications about the hazing activities, and that is a purposeful decision to do it at a lower level. And most of the hazing that we see can happen with sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And so it's not just the senior officers that we're seeing, because the idea of making and earning the right to be part of whatever organization usually is the most influential with the sophomores and juniors, because they're most closely associated with this. And Tim Marshall and Laura Santa Cruz over in Sporting Center have done just some fabulous research on this and really why people haze and things like that. So anytime that we are able to identify individual actors, especially if they perpetrate. But so for example, a lot of times hazing occurs with blindfolds. So individuals don't know who blindfolded them, but they know that they were blindfolded as part of the activity for the checkers club. I'm using them because they're a comical example, but I think that's, you know, the example we would like to say, okay, well, who is the person who held the shot glass to your age and chug? You know, we want to hold that, but a lot of times we know that individual actors committed the behavior, but the organization is holding the responsible.
I think it's a little bit determining collective guilt without individual action, the tricky business. There's a somewhere, I mean, this is my layperson's view of this. If a collective organization violates something, then somebody, you know, some group decided to do that. But I understand the considerations.
I think Jeremy said, it's cool to say, the goal of this is to allow up to X years. So in theory, if it was just the seniors and we're convinced of that, the hearing board or the summer senior group would say, you're suspended for 1 year, 2 years, it's 18 months. So in essence, it gives discretion so that it's through the whole organization, we can clean it all out, or we can say, we just need to take the top off. So there is flexibility in that regard.
Yeah, but if we know that, then they should be punished.
Well, exactly. And I completely agree. It actually also ties in just very briefly into something else that was in terms of looking at the hearing board procedures and just providing, seeing if this committee wants to provide guidance via an appendix or some other way to try and have some of those just when the hearing board is deciding sanctions to say, the community and the committee has contemplated this, and obviously leaving discretion with them, but to almost have some idea of that idea of, okay, here's the overarching purpose. You have discretion to act as you see fit. And then I believe Jeremy was next.
So the point that I just want to bring up, and I do this a lot, so, but I think it's important. It's a way of the way we think about approaching these things. And rather than thinking about who is guilty and who are we punishing, the question that comes to my mind is, who are we protecting by this change? It's not about the punishment, but who are we protecting? Because the people that are in danger are those younger folks that are getting hazed. That's what's important to me, at least. So when we're talking about an organization like this with leadership that is proven to have tainted the well, so to speak, the idea that we can protect these younger folks by destroying that culture, by removing that organization, and that culture is pervasive and insidious if you don't remove it completely. And I think we are protecting people by allowing an increase to remove that culture from an organization.
So potential punches.
Yes. Yeah, and that's, to me, it's a big difference in a way of thinking about it. It's rather that we need to make sure that these folks get punished. We need to make sure these folks get protected.
After dismissal, is there any policy for like reinstatement? Because I know there are like certain like anecdotal stories of fraternities that leave and like come back, or like I don't really know the reasons, but that are just like reinstated So that's a different process that's not controlled by my office because they don't come under the code. But anything dismissed under the code is a permanent dismissal.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the goal of like dismissing an organization for like 5 years would just be like saying we value your organization, just not like the culture or procedures within it right now.
Yeah, I think that is the idea that the behavior wasn't so egregious. And that's not to say that there are not the instances in which the dismissal remains the appropriate sanction. But there's times where you say, you know, this organization has had a long history. We think that the hazy behavior has sprung up for the past 3 years because of XYZ leadership. And so we recognize that it's probably time to thin out the culture and try to give it a start. But you're welcome to reapply and come back to campus at the conclusion of 3 or 4 years. And so, but if it's a permanent dismissal, it's the same way as if a student is dismissed from Cornell or if a faculty or staff member is fired and revoked the tenure. It's done.
They're not coming back. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kaufman, I'm also a member.
You can go first.
So maybe everybody's clear on this, and I'm the only one who's still a little unclear. So fraternities and sororities are not under this jurisdiction, okay? Completely.
Right. So there was a do you mind?
Absolutely. Okay.
So there was a 1989 Board of Trustees resolution that said pre-organization would be recognized and not registered. Mm-hmm. And so my jurisdiction is over registered organizations and mm-hmm. you know universities, sponsored organizations. And so my understanding is that was a way to really limit the liability of the university at a time when there was nationwide some hazing deaths, mm-hmm. not alcohol-related deaths. I know that there have been committees that the university assembly has participated on to really start to investigate if that's going to remain the best practices. So right now I don't have jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I mean, that's a really important issue because if it's, you know, just to limit liability, that's a different motivation for saying what we're going to have nothing to do with you.
Yeah,
so that was just,
do.
You know, one point, but it's still objectionable. So that's a question I just want clarity. But I mean, I think Richard raised some really important issues about organizational responsibility. I just don't know, because I have no experience with it, you know, how what it takes to make an organization responsible as an organization. You know, if there's an agency, if there's some problems with people very deliberately, you know, taking actions to show that there isn't some sort of agency and responsibility for the actions. So, I mean, that's just a, you know, and that's both a factual and a policy question that I have here. But assuming that we can figure out organizational responsibility, that issue of why suspend organizations, I took a very different approach just kind of thinking about it, listening to you all, rather than, okay, you're gonna suspend the group long enough so that you can kind of kill the culture, you know, it's gotten so toxic that you get a new group in here. It seems to me that eliminates the possibility of this being anything but punishment. That is, you know, some kind of notion of rehabilitation. If there's some possibility of actually using, to use your term incentive, using the period of suspension as an way, you know, people can actually learn and change their understandings and their conduct. Isn't that, I mean, when Colonel talks about the code, they always talk about terms of education. So isn't it more of an educational process? You know, some suspension for some work is actually more positive.
So,
I actually, did Sarah say that?
I have something else to say, but you can.
So, I think that doesn't preclude the idea of extending the suspension time frame. I think that as part of the potential sanctions, some kind of restorative educational mediation for responsible parties or all of that group. I think that's a great idea.
But not if it's for 5 years. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Well,
in terms of the time that's so long that you just get rid of people, what's the incentive?
Well, that group wouldn't be able to reform mm-hmm. until after that period. But if they've done something that extreme, mm-hmm. having the option to say, you're suspended, you have the option for this, or you're being assigned to this mm-hmm. Mediation as part of your restorative justice and learning what you did wrong and how to do it better next time so that this doesn't happen again, I think is valuable. But I think having the ability to say that if somebody kills somebody on campus, you don't just, well, a bit extreme, but there's
they're
a whole range.
The JA.
There's a whole range before that. Well, the organization.
Okay.
The organization.
Well, they're also going to jail.
The individuals are, but not the organization. So the point that I'm trying to make here, though, is having a variance available beyond a year to say this is extreme. Your organization has been valuable to the university as a whole in the past. We think you can be valuable again in the future. We're going to suspend your organization for this time period. Those who are involved in this will not be able to participate in this organization during their stay. You are going to have this option for mediation and learning and education. And the people coming after you will learn from your mistakes and be able to rebuild. And I'm sure following up on something like that and rebuilding an organization like that, there will have to be further conversations about this is why you're rebuilding your organization. I still see it as very much a building and supportive response. And I think your idea, though, for adding in a layer of sanction for like structured mediation after something like that is valuable.
I was just, you know, just to kind of follow up, I was just really addressing the question of going from here, projects 1 year to either new and or something that seems excessive.
No one is valuable.
You know, it seemed to me that a very long period of time doesn't get at that possibility for change.
Absolutely. I think it's something that we're going to, I see this is starting to, actually, first of all, I know you've been listening. Do you have any comments you'd like to add to this, or?
I'm sorry.
She's still there. Just keeping, let's make sure he's still there. I've heard him.
He's still there.
Who is it? He's the Professor Putnam.
I know you've been waiting patiently.
Oh, yeah.
Was that to me? Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, sorry, I was on mute there. No, I have nothing to add. I'm having a hard time hearing everything. I'm getting about 40% of it, but I haven't heard anything yet that I object to, so let's go.
Thank you. Please let us know if there's anything you want to add, or if you can't hear, we can try and have people speak up. So thank you.
Okay.
Long way to
shout it out.
I think the distinction between like clubs and group organizations is actually pretty big, because as a student, I don't think people are nearly as close, have the same ties as they do with a fraternity authority, or hazing is nearly as bad with clubs, just generally speaking. I also think this whole regrowth or rehabilitation long term probably wouldn't be possible. I don't think it's very likely that people would come back and try work as hard as maybe a sorority or fraternity would to rebuild. So I think if we're going to 5 years, the chances that the organization will actually grow from this are very small. I think it's equivalent to dismissal. I can't think of any organizations that people will really try to cause it's really difficult to contact Cornellians and get people. They actually do.
Yeah.
I mean, are there any other organizations other than Caietas Lakers?
That's good.
Well, I think again, this is something that when we have the actual language, we can discuss. But also, this is also why hearing boards have discretion. It's also why there's the idea that this committee and that this body might want to have almost a guidance document of these are things to be aware of, because if that's something that comes up, and if it's, we're going to suspend an organization that has history at Cornell but is unique to Cornell for 5 years, I believe it was, actually, I don't think, correct me if you're listening, but I believe it was
we have to educate the community as well. And so student organizations are incredibly protected. And so when we talk about, so I can share, okay, it's, leaders. I catch it up with leaders. No, that's public record, and anyone can kind of read them. That was publicly available. And so I think when we talk about education, we also have to look at the educated community, because that also just says, it's not acceptable to have four naked men in a bathtub filled with ice cold water as part of your initiation. it's not appropriate to do this and to do this and to do this. And so I think when, and this is all available on the Hazer website. So there's education that I think the conduct process does provide. And so, you know, that's another area of education. We have a suspension reintegration program that we're piloting this year, both for individuals and organizations. And we're really tailoring the group one. I worked for a national headquarters for a sorority, and so we've recharted colonies. We've gone back to campuses where they were closed for 10, 15 years, and they came back successfully. I think other organizations, anytime that you have a strong alumni group or you have a strong connection, your likelihood of recharting successfully is increased. So we look at athletes, right? So NCAA teams that have been banned, you look at anything that's going to have a long record, it's going to have the ability to recharge. And I think when we look at the 5 years, I think it's not only because it's the best practices, but that mirrors the language of the student. And so part of what I think is important for the code is that we have consistency. And so 5 years was also kind of recommended and kind of talked about because that's what it says for the students.
Just another note on individual responsibility. Reaching into these organizations, there's a lot of pressure. And reaching into these organizations and saying to the officers or anybody else, you cannot do this. You know, but making it clear there's a bright line, as wide as we can think that, you know, the behavior will be punished. I think it's really important empowering them to say no. And so it's the individual responsibility is important. But that's my take on this. That doesn't have to do with what we're doing with this change. I think it is a little hanging. But seeing down the line as we think about ways in which we, different kinds of social situations in which we're trying to achieve different results.
Well, again, it's also factual. Just would be helpful to me. It's first, you said you got a call from who saying
So I got an email from the presidents of the Tri Council.
Tell me what Tri
Council. So Tri Council is. So I'm not angry, but it's a disclaimer. But Tri Council is the governing body of fraternity and sorority mm-hmm. life on campus that includes members from Interfraternity Council, mm-hmm. which is for fraternities, Panhellenic Council, which is for sororities, and then Multicultural Greek Letter Council, mm-hmm. Which focuses on multicultural programming and has some, I believe, some houses as well. Mm-hmm. And so they assemble in what's called Tri-Council, mm-hmm. and there are three co-presidents, mm-hmm. the presidents of the other organizations. And so they contacted me saying, we know you're an undergraduate representative on the UA. We would like, we'd like someone to bring, to bring this forward. And I'm like, well, that's an interesting issue. I will definitely have the CJC look into it.
Well, see, what I don't understand is if you don't have jurisdiction over them, then why are they involved in this?
So that's a really great question.
Maybe I was missing something.
No. You hit the nail on the head. I would imagine that the organization that was suspended, Tayuga with Watchers,
Waiters. I know.
It makes no sense. The waiters would be the ones that are like serving the community. Whatever.
The Watchers technically aren't a student organization.
They're
an independently funded
entity.
Yeah. Okay, wait, which one got suspended?
Waiters.
CW.
And every time you want to go, wait, it's Waiters.
Yeah, okay, exactly. There we go. So you got it. So CW got suspended. I imagine that many of them were in Greek life. I don't know. Do you know more about that? I don't.
My understanding is probably no, because they're out of the process. Like, mine is, to kind of answer your question, I think that the tri-councils have been very involved in the process of really evaluating whether Greek life should stay independent.
Yeah.
And so I think they're aware that there's a possibility that they might come back with a vote. Okay. So I think they're starting to look at what would be
points.
Okay.
So that's, I think that
probably clarifies
that
their motive.
Sense.
Yeah.
That
so she.
Because I just couldn't see it.
So she knows their motivation way better than I do.
No, I'm not. I'm not on the committee. I'm waiting for its report as much as y'all are.
But they're just like, this would be nice. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, well, I agree. I don't really see how this impacts you, but I agree. So
something that had been brought up,
had I not agreed, I still would have brought it forward. But
so this is kind of laying the groundwork for the potential for the Greek life groups to come back.
Makes it easier.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Okay, because that relates to my other question, which is, you know, other than the Cayuga waiters, is there a pattern of problems of anything of other groups outside of Greek life?
I would say I've never been in a campus where haze was much of an issue.
You mean other than Greek life? I mean other than Greek life.
Oh, okay. Not as much sports as, and maybe I don't, but our professional honor societies.
I'm in one.
Yeah, and we also have academic hazing in the level that I've never seen yet.
Academic hazing?
Yeah. So, you know.
Recite!
So, for example, there's been a lot of, a new person comes to the university, I've seen a lot of the things that a lot of the people do. And so, some of the traditions, if we looked at Dragon Day 3 years ago, any other campus, that would have been shut down immediately. Some of the activities, the idea that you're having people shave each other's heads and things of that nature. And so credit to the individuals with Dragon Day and how they're really trying to say, you know, times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
But we have very deep-seated hazing in almost every across the board at the university. So,
wow, I had no idea.
Dragon.
Honor society?
Yeah, the kill of a dragon, let's just not shave people's heads. Like, that's probably a good thing.
I mean, unless they want that.
Yeah, but holding them down and shaving their heads
is not
okay. Yes,
that would be bad.
So if that was
in school.
Yeah, if that was in any other context, you know, if it was in a Greek organization.
Exactly.
Well, but are they? I'm just trying to. I always want to know what the problem is that we're trying to solve. And so you're saying that this issue actually is a very real issue, but if that's not considered hazing. I mean, you're saying any other place that would be considered hazing. You're saying it's not considered hazing here, so that's not this issue.
No, I think it has been, and it's been, they've made steps to change it, but I don't have jurisdiction over the architecture department. Right? Like, that's not my thing. And so when we talk of hazing from an institutional culture, is that we've had it so embedded not only in our extracurricular, but within our curricular activities.
But you're saying organizations that you do have jurisdiction over, there really is a problem of people engaging in hazing and it coming before you.
Yeah, I think we're starting to get to the point that reporting is being more viable. I think we're starting to also see behavioral misconduct, not just hazing, right? So we see providing alcohol to minors in a very robust way and things of that nature. And a lot of other issues that have come forward, but we haven't been able to move forward with some of these cases. But I can tell you, we just received another hazing complaint by an organization yesterday.
Oh, great.
That we will start our investigation process. And so
you think this is a real live issue?
And I think the reason why we don't hear about it at a big scale is because a lot of these organizations and individuals settle their cases through a summary decision agreement, which means it doesn't come on the record. We have the waiters, which is probably the most robust hazing case that we have as a public record. But again, it's available for anyone to see in the office if they want to look at it. But I think we're going to see more and more as society changes to say that hazing, I think we're starting to see the proof point the same way that sexual assaults, that there's such a stigma being associated with it. But I think we're going to see more cases go to hearing and have hearing allegations of hazing because people don't want that on the record because they realize that it is a detriment. So, it is.
Thank you. Richard, you're up next. And then just in terms of, I think this is, again, I think it's long for, I think the next meeting will come up with some language just to start having a more in-depth discussion. We're trying to start, I know there's some other stuff on our agenda, to start trying to bring it back. We still have plenty of time, but just to start being cognizant of that. So,
hazing doesn't.
It does.
Yes, it does. It's remedied.
So,
you know,
yes,
we have a very good amendment.
So, Dragon Day is not. Dragon Day is not.
Right, so besides not having jurisdiction of the crowns.
So it'd be something else.
It'd be different.
The key thing in this, I think, from is that the individual voluntarily, in some sense, commits to the hazing and then it gets out of control.
Well, that's why there's the first part.
Yeah, regardless, right, regardless of the person's consent to participate, which is different than sexual assault or something like that. It's a different kind of thing. So Dragon Day would be covered.
Right, the two different reasons. But I think there's other provisions in the code that if we ever got a report of someone saying that I was forced to have But one of the challenges with doing hazing cases is that so often the individuals who are perpetrating the hazing were themselves hazed. So we're looking at how to that process of people who have been victimized and then have started the cycle of them. So there's been instances where we were able to stop the cycle that we thought that would be we chose not to move forward with who were hazed but had not yet done the hazing for others. And so that's one of the really big challenges of the mind of individual actors too, is that sometimes it's again young people are not wanting to reveal some of that to us.
That being said, that I've spoke a lot with that if you're a new member of an organization and part of your quote unquote rite of passage is, oh, you have to pitch in more to clean up or things that are not. Again, the thing is, it's not immediate. It's just something minor or, again, more chores. Again, assuming all else is relatively all else as well. There's nothing wrong with having quote unquote paying your dues. The key, of course, is when you cross that line into being dangerous, demeaning, or everything else starts to chip in. So, again, and that's what I heard someone say, oh, we can't do anything for you being new. I said, no, just like anywhere else, if you're new, you may have to follow the book a little more. But again, the key is to distinguish between are you. Is it demeaning dangerous to safety or otherwise, or is it just, okay, we all clean up, or we have a rotation for cleaning up. The seniors clean up once a week, the freshmen clean up twice a week, or something, again, something where it's relative. Again, obviously, it's a very, very, very
causing horror.
Yes.
To push back a little bit on that. By that definition, that is considered hazing, or that would make a difference, is right, because it's the idea of continued membership. The idea that you're creating a class distinction because of membership. But I know it doesn't make it right, though, but it qualifies. So to me, that would be a difference of the sanction, right? To say that the organization was found responsible for hazing, but their sanction is to took maybe a class about group bonding in a different setting. So I think one of the things that's so hard for my office to change the perception of is that just because you're found for a violation doesn't mean the most extreme thing will happen.
Right.
I worked with a lot of organizations where I've had organizations that they had 3 hazing violations. Within 2 years, they weren't dismissed because of those example, having somebody, the freshmen clean up. And it's really big in the South, the freshmen come and they reserve the bleachers for their football games. And so they save the soul section. So it's hazing because not every member of the organization has to do it, that it's very distinctive by class. If it was every guy whose name was Mark had to do it, not hazing, right? Probably not. But when we look at that definition, and again, I think you're right that it is a very strong definition that's similar to my hazing experts, that continued membership piece as well.
And reading it says hazing means an act that is explicit, implicit, and then says could be seen. I mean, I'm always wondering, again, the language is saying here's the things that it could be seen as a reasonable person endangering physical health. So again, when reading that, it appears, and I'm just going to point, it makes life easier. It's in terms of it says explicit blah 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 condition for initiation of admission to or affiliation with community membership, and then it says comma could be. So I always have read that as it must be this, and then it must follow, and then it can do 1, 2, or 3. So I wasn't or 4.
So that's, I mean, again, also that might be a clarification. I mean, just even clarifying what I had been informed later and that, or I had learned earlier, and that it was the, okay, it has to be, it fits this category and that it fits the following, one of the following buckets. But again, that area where the code should be clarified, that if that's what we mean, then by all means, we need to clarify that.
Yes, I think that.
Explicit or implicit condition of initiation and, you know, an individual doesn't decide that. The organization does. So it's a very collective. I don't see any implications from that. But it doesn't focus on individual behavior.
We often charge, if we're charging individuals, we'll charge for endangerment.
We
charge with hazing too, because I read that as not requiring the whole organization to act. And so the example I always use is, you know, taking your soon-to-be little brother or little sister to a cemetery blindfolded. And so I think that fits the definition of that. We have a different conversation about whether it's a colon or a common, whether it's not very good hand. I think that's an interesting perspective. I don't read it that.
Well, that's, again, that's exactly where, when you said that, I said, oh my gosh, I was reading it differently. And that's also where clarifying the code is an important thing. Because when you start getting the points where reasonable minds can differ, you point where reasonable hearing boards can differ. And that's not good for anyone, or in fact, legally, it's not good, and that could result in unequal application, which has legal.
I actually read it the same way, which is it has to be all of the beginning and one of the following.
But that illustrates the point exactly. That it's when you have that, it's exactly where we need to clarify things.
Yeah.
But you know, does anyone want to add, or are we? I think we discussed this topic quite a bit. I think it's valuable that we're starting. Hey, this has also illustrated that the need to go through it, at least at the very, very least, clean up. Because this is, again, something where someone could, in good faith, think, oh, I'm not doing it, and they could almost unwittingly, like, sanction or be like, still, you don't want someone to unwittingly stroll into a violation by accident. But that means that there's two other things on our agenda, one of which is the UA Resolution X, and that would just be, this one is, pro forma is not the word I would use, but it's close to it. This is, we had the CJC in the spring we solicited applications for the University Hearing Review Boards. We're actually working with Michelle in the spring to streamline some of those procedures, and actually that will likely involve some code changes. But we had a few people who were, the CJC had approved, who were not in the formal resolution, and then we ended up having resignations or otherwise their vacancies that were not previously anticipated. So these individuals were given emergency appointments as is authorized by the code. They still need to be formally confirmed by the UA. So this is the initial list. I was told, actually, by Sean Friday, I'll be working with JD, hopefully, the list of, we had some other people who were unable to serve or step aside. So again, to go back to the CJC's internal list to put more names so we can fill the boards and have them at full strength. This is a relatively, this resolution is very similar to the ones we passed, but it fits also in the idea that we, as a CJC, had gotten away with some of our own procedures in terms of interim appointments being actually going through the confirmation process. So this will pass. I imagine the other thing pass very easily, just a matter of adding their other names. Mm-hmm. But just to make you aware that also we are looking at the UHRD procedures in terms of how to make it the most holistic process. I know this year, as we had the year before as well, we had a very large number of really highly qualified applicants. And looking at the record in the past, the CDC used to start doing UHRD things in the fall. So in essence, they would get their applications, sort them into people who I think, in essence, these people are functionally identical, and they would have interviews or some other last tiebreaker. Again, that's not something we have to bring back, but I think in terms of, bless you. When we've had 150 applicants and we rank them on a scale of 1 to 5 and we have 35s, how do you distinguish between those last few people without being rare or arbitrary who will get a seat, because we only have so many seats? So that is something to be aware of. And this resolution, as I said, right now is just standard form, just with new names, and we'll be adding those additional names later. And then the last thing, and actually, we'll have some time. Two things. Sorry. The next one was permanent meeting time. I referenced the CJC. Considering we have so much going on, there's talk of moving towards weekly meetings, or at the very least having a main meeting every 2 weeks and at least some form of meeting every week. I'm speaking to the office. We can get this time slot in terms from now until when necessary. Obviously, if someone has conflicts or otherwise, I sent a paper or email to the listener, and I will follow up with that. If anyone has issues, we can move around.
but it's my hope to continue meeting around this time slot unless there is an objection or we need to find another one. And aside of that, the last thing actually, which is on the horizon, it's related, but it's not in that, and actually I noticed this myself, I'm a student in the business school, the Johnson School. They have what they call an honor code, and it's actually parts of it are, I think troubling is the right word for it, and that reading through it, what I saw was, A, it says at the beginning, it cannot conflict with the code or the code of academic integrity. However, I would argue it intractably does, and that it's quantum proofs preponderance. And it specifically contemplates certain things that are, A, I know are under the code, and B, are under academic integrity. And my understanding, speaking with Johnson's administration, is in the past, they have handled things entirely in-house, so to speak. And, for instance, they're not allowed for even things such as rowdy conduct at a recruiting event, which would be more of a code violation, not academic integrity, obviously, doesn't live with us. But I'm sure the faculty senate will be interested to see it, and I plan to reach out to them. But, for instance, rowdy conduct at a recruiting event, you're not allowed to have an advisor, which to me is concerning because the code specifically allows the JCC. If you have someone show up, they cannot speak, and the standard is preponderance of the evidence, and it's decided by a faculty panel. And they say that they've been trying to tell me this does not conflict with the code, and I have been telling them that I would argue this is an intractable conflict because you have a separate quantum proof. You don't allow an advisor even notify them they have the under the code they have the JCC, they have the right to have the JCCs present. So I think, doing some research, most top business schools have an honor code. I suspect Johnson adopted one, amalgamating and trying to do with the best of intentions. But I have been emailing them since July, and I have been stonewalled. I sent them these 6 emails, and they keep not replying or saying, Administrator X will reply. And it's getting to the point where I might send one more email or even ask you with like a formal request for information from them.
This is great.
But
I love this stonewall.
Well,
something perked up. This is fun.
Well, I'm glad you're getting as excited as we are. I wouldn't necessarily assign malice. It's more maybe benign neglect. I did not identify myself as true to CSA. Oh, I'm a student, and you very clearly say you are bound by this, even if you're aware of it or not. So I said I was more of a, well, as a member of the community, I'm now interested, but also putting my CJC hat in, speaking with the JCC. This is concerning in that it was, again, I'm sure it was done with the best of intentions, but it is running parallel and stepping into the code and academic integrity in a way that I would argue is inconsistent with that, and that it's fundamentally like a pattern. You can't have a different quantum proof. So I know that's something I'm looking into. It may wind up with this committee. Again, my goal is to more or less tell them, here's why I think you're wrong, and try in essence, on without having to go through a formal resolution, to say, here's how we can fix it. But just something I want to make you aware of, and I think Michelle and Jeremy, or Michelle, yeah.
Just as you're kind of looking at that, one of the things I'd be very keenly encouraging the UA and this community to look at is academic integrity on the whole. Each college has its own process and its own procedures. I think I spoke with the data faculty about this briefly as an issue of what's concerning to me, because I think that a student should have the same rights depending, regardless of what college they're in. And then looking at it, that you know, somebody's duly enrolled into different colleges, which one has precedence, and then also the concern of the fact of if the academic dishonesty occurred in a college in which a student is not enrolled but they were taking some classes.
Such a good
one. Yeah, where does that go to? And then secondly with those is that there's no consistency with reporting. And so I think it's very concerning the fact that we don't know a student's entire behavioral history. And so if there's been some academic integrity and fails and then different one in AAP, then we have an individual who's demonstrated twice that they haven't failed to adhere to the academic rigors of our campus and the community. And so I think there needs to be some concern about how we share information and the students with that. So I think if you're going to be looking to the attic, but I think tapping onto that is important.
Well, as you mentioned, dual degree, it's actually, or dual enrollment. For me, this year, I am technically considered a business school student, even though I'm still taking the majority of law school classes. And I remember I asked, just anecdotally, how would this be here with me? And they more or less said, they don't know. And I said, well, I'd appreciate them saying that versus just coming up with something. But again, if you're trying to run parallel to these other things, academic integrity is, again, I know the faculty, I've worked with some faculty members on it, but they are relatively protective. But that being said, in terms of how can we standardize and even through the UA, bring it together, because I think the honor code is emblematic of a larger siloing in that, or units are more or less saying, we need something,
instead of coming to the, for instance, academic integrity, the university-wide one has a carve-out for the law school. It doesn't, one does not exist with it for Johnson. So in terms of why didn't you engage on the larger scale with the UA? Again, if there's something specific that applies just to Johnson, we can say, A, we might just give the add to the code because it only applied to you, or B, determine how to best handle it instead of just us finding out because a member of the CDC happens to be enrolled and happens to sit there and know this doesn't make sense.
And just say for the record, I don't want to add to that.
No.
But I'm happy to consult if we can talk about standardization.
Absolutely, and that's part of the thing. Is you mentioned it, and so do you want it? And sometimes people are trying to get rid of it, but in this case, it's just trying to level it. So I think, Jeremy, you had something you wanted to add?
When sending those emails, you're reaching a staff member, and I will say from a staff perspective, though not to forgive it, you're probably just getting, I'm too busy to deal with a question I can't answer right now, so.
Well, that's why I said, stonewalling implies a negative. I really don't believe it's negative. I think it's more of I've been bounced around between multiple administrators.
Because nobody knows the answer.
Well, exactly, and that's why I almost want to say, who wrote this, or did you pull it off a shelf? Because I could partially, it seems like it was put together by someone who said, we need to make sure it's subordinate to the university-wide codes, but after that completely ignored them or just went to a different thing.
Yeah.
That's why I said it's gone as long without being discovered, but I flat out told a number of my classmates, if someone charges you under this, please let me know because I will alert the ACC and then this will be taken a little more urgency because I was told people have been expelled under this, and I said, wait a second, what? So again, things to be aware of, and one thing also that I was told that under Johnson, if you're, in essence, they allow for collective punishment insofar as if you are on a team with someone and one person falsifies their portion of the assignment, the entire team, even if they have no knowledge, can be up to expelled. And again, that's certain things to me are that I would argue are just on their face troubling. And that's why I wanted to be aware of that.
So Mike, I would guess that the law school has a separate honor code. And the only place that comes down
the law school one is very similar to that because it also has an exception for the campus code, but for the academic integrity, it follows the bar's rules, which are actually, in my understanding, more strict than Cornell's.
But there are a number of ways in which external organizations impose conditions on bodies that. So I would look. I don't know anything about the situation with that. That applies to them. But the law school guess they have to do that way. And my guess is that if we had jurisdiction, which I understand we don't, the medical school would also do that.
I think they may have. I know there's at least two things mentioned under the academic carry code for carve outs. I don't recall it. It might have been the medical school, but just looking holistically, even Johnson and the law school, they all work together, or try and work together. They got Johnson, law school went and got carve out. And to me, that's important. And the Johnson honor code is not publicly available. I searched high and low, and I could not find a copy of it on the Johnson website. So it seems to me, again, because that's
secret honor code.
Well, exactly. That's just it.
That honor code that no one knows.
Was it you checked in, you agree to this. And actually, when I was applying to Johnson, one of the things was, if you're here, you must not seek to amend or, in essence, try and prevent you from being involved in the code and being subject to it. And I had to tell them I'm involved with the CJC. I don't anticipate it being an issue, but again, it's things that are so weird.
It's worth looking at.
Well, exactly. It's worth looking at the very least, and that's why I wanted to bring it up. But I believe we have, actually, that clock is slow.
Well, actually, one other thing about that, too, is with this new College of Business that got shoved down everybody's throat without any governance, but I digress. that actually raises another wrinkle to this,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
You've got these entities that are now under this one, and which of them applies to people in this new College of Business?
Yes.
Which is actually two colleges, three colleges.
Right. And one is a state school, so right.
Part of the program is in it.
Yeah.
Well, right. The levels of complexity.
Three entities.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
The level of complexity is staggering.
Being a big word.
I had no idea that different colleges had different honor codes. I thought that it was the university
code. Unless you said like there's an explicit carve-out. So it seems like on its face, unless you have some sort of explicit carve-out.
I understand you. Yeah. I will freely admit, I read it as a matter of interest. Mm-hmm. I didn't read it the way I read the code in terms of an eye towards what would this committee look at changing. But my understanding is the university-wide code of academic integrity lays out the standards, and then each college can take them and have their own education
body.
That's
the floor. That should be the floor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So again, it's a symptom of Cornell's style.
Yeah, history. No, it's very interesting because if you have lower standards of due process, then
yes. Well, exactly.
Not the code, but the broad integrity policy.
Well, exactly. This also ties into transplantation. Okay, you're suspended for academic integrity. Mm-hmm. We don't want some people to. Again, not to say that too many should be punished unduly, but if you've been found guilty of a violation or found you have responsible for violation, whether that's academic integrity or otherwise, it shouldn't be you got lucky and that the college you were caught in doesn't do this right or keeps throwing records off of the filing cabinet that no one could find. But that actually means
college equality.
We are. But and that's
rallying
cry. It's 6:00. Is there anything else I'd like to say? Yes, I realize that clock is slow. But these clocks aren't. So if anyone they want to add or otherwise comment on?
Motion to adjourn.
Any dissent?
Fair enough. Yeah. Brain feels active.
Yeah,
especially at the end of the day.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, if we use this time, for me it would be important to be able to leave by 5:45.
Of course, we can move it. Yes. Actually, I have a class that starts at 6, so I'm going
to. Yeah, I have some place to be downtown.
Yes, absolutely. We can certainly. We can tweet all. And that's just. We used to use off weeks for the UA, but if we're moving to a weekly meeting.
I was happy to hear about your kind of partnership with Scheinman Institute doing the
education. I saw more about
meeting
every Tuesday.
It sounds awesome.
Working sessions, so that if you can come, you can.
First semester we did it was we got really great feedback, and now, as Gabe was mentioning, I presented to the class today, and then starting in mid-September, there are new variations and facilitating dialogues, and
thanks.
Well, thank you.
And do let me know what you
think. Mumbiax approached me.
I just couldn't believe it when I saw it.